We are now in the season of Advent. We're also in our novena to the Immaculate Conception, fourth day already of the novena. Let's focus on Advent. In the world, of course, Advent is a little bit misunderstood because it's always celebrated as Christmas time. And if you say it's Advent, people start thinking about, I don't know, the shepherds and setting up the Belen and maybe the star and the Magi and all the Christmassy type imagery. But Advent doesn't start with any of that stuff. It has a completely different focus, and we ran into this yesterday. The readings didn't mention anything about the shepherds or about the birth of Jesus. It was more about the frightening prospect of everything changing, the end of the world. Well, we know, if you're used to the Advent pattern, you know that it always starts with a prophecy or a promise. And Advent is all about preparation for the fulfillment of that promise or of those promises. Preparation for the day when the promises will be fulfilled. So we know that pattern. But it might still take us by surprise to see the very first gospel during the weekdays of Advent is about a Roman centurion. It's a surprising gospel anyway, because the Romans were the enemy, and you just don't expect a Jewish preacher with Jewish followers to be so ready to go to the house of a Roman centurion. So there's a lot of surprises involved here. But in order to understand why the liturgy picks this gospel and why it is very wise to do so, we have to start with the prophecy. So we go back to the first reading. The prophecy is from the early stages of the book of Isaiah. And the Lord promises a time when nations will go to Jerusalem. Jerusalem There's two options, and I'm reading the wrong one. Certainly Isaiah, that's early Isaiah. Yeah, Isaiah 2. Okay, yes. This the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established as the highest mountain raised above the hills, and all nations shall stream toward it. So there's this universality to it, and different peoples will go to Jerusalem to learn about the ways of the Lord. It's an image that the Jews, or the Israelites, treasured because they were not considered the center of the world. The Romans, for sure, thought of Palestine as a very remote outpost, the edges of the empire. But this prophecy is that Jerusalem, Mount Zion, will be the center, will be the high point, will be like the capital of the world. And the Lord will be there and will establish a new order. One of the striking images, and one of the most famous images from this reading, is the prophecy that they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. The weapons of war will be used for cultivation. A complete reversal. And so in the hearts of the Israelites, there's this longing for a time of peace. Not only peace meaning we won't be oppressed anymore, but we will be the dominant country. And so they had in their mind that the descendant of David, who was going to fulfill these prophecies, would be a powerful warrior, leader, emperor type figure. And there would be no more war because Israel would be stronger than everybody else, and nobody would dare to raise their swords against them. They would rather beat the swords into plowshares and be content to just cultivate the land. So, very promising prophecy from the Jewish perspective, and it was deep in the psyche, you could say. So when Jesus comes along, he doesn't quite do it the way they expect. Here he meets a centurion, a soldier, he's got a sword, and he's not about to beat that sword into a plowshare. I mean, he's still in charge, but he's humble enough to ask Jesus to cure his servant. And he has faith enough to believe that Jesus will do it, and that he can do it simply by saying the word. Now, there's something Advent-y about this. First of all, the prophecy is Advent-y because it's a promise of something to come, and it's something that they haven't seen yet. In fact, they're nowhere near seeing it when Isaiah says this. So they have to live in the confidence that something that they don't see is going to happen. Well, this is the centurion. And it's interesting that this passage in which the centurion asks for a cure and pronounces his faith that it will happen if Jesus says the word, this passage, we don't even read the part where the servant is cured. We're left with Jesus' amazement at the centurion's faith and his statement that many people, many nations will come from east and west, meaning not just Jews, Israelites, but people from east and west, even Romans and all kinds of pagans will come and join the patriarchs in the banquet of the kingdom of heaven. And that's where the reading stops. Well, what happened to the servant? What happened to the cure? He doesn't say that he cured him. I think the liturgy does this deliberately. It like leaves us hanging. What's going to happen? Now, we know the story, so we don't even notice that the servant is not cured. But this is why it's Advent. It's promise. It's affirmation. It's faith. It's a humble presentation before God. And then it's waiting. Advent is a waiting time. We wait in faith with confidence that God will work, but without seeing him work. Not yet. Advent, we know, means coming and coming of the Lord. Well, the centurion teaches us that we don't have to see him coming with our eyes. Jesus didn't go, or you say, Jesus didn't come to the house. He didn't go to the centurion's house. Not physically. Not visibly. That's why this is such a profound Advent instruction for us, because here we are, and it looks like everything is the same today as it was yesterday, as it was the day before. Why is Advent any different than any other time? Well, because we're focusing now on seeing with eyes of faith and resting in the promise, not in what we see with our eyes. It's the season of hope. A season of rejoicing in what we know will happen, even if we don't see it yet. That's the centurion. You just say the word. Just say the word and it will happen. And Jesus is amazed. That's where the gospel ends. Well, does he say the word or not? Well, yes, he does. We know he does. We know he says, go, it will be done to you according to your faith, or something like that. But the point is, we don't see that happen yet. We have to live in a kind of darkness because we don't see it, but a light that comes from faith, knowing that it will happen because the promise is fulfilled in Jesus. And as long as we're with him, following him, and trusting ourselves to him, trusting in his word, the power of his word, then that's good enough. It's as if it's already done. That's the joy of Advent. We don't see it yet, but we rejoice that we know God is faithful to his promises. So let's, for this first day of Advent, take on the faith of the centurion, the confidence that God fulfills his promises. in his own way and in his own secret ways, not in dramatic displays, but he does it. And knowing that is enough for people of faith.